car. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Like us on Facebook, the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @BSportsFree4All. And be sure to check out our weekly blogs on sportsblog.com. Thanks, and enjoy the show. Never has a win hurt so bad, Josh.
Double the trouble in the injury report.
That it was, and we have ourselves a quite the disaster in terms of the injury report now. It's like you don't even want to talk about the game. The game is a distant memory. It's not even worth it. It's like there's not even a memorable thing from that game other than the fact that you just lost two of your star players after losing more star players, after losing everybody. We're going to be down to the punter here. Sam Cook is going to be playing quarterback soon.
Let me ask you this. Which of the three were more memorable? The Ravens-Rams game, the Maryland-Illinois football game, or the Maryland-Indiana football game, or Survivor Series?
Wow. Maryland-Indiana.
Yeah. It was the least memorable.
Yeah, that was one of the more least memorable, but all of them are just ranked up there with just complete dumpster fires, and that could pretty much be the title of this episode if I wasn't going for news headlines for the titles of the shows now. So, yeah, you can consider this episode the dumpster fire edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, and what a show we got on tap for you this week, ladies and gentlemen, because, yes, we are going to be talking about the fact that the franchise quarterback who has started every single game in his 7.5-year career.
Every single game.
Every single game, Josh. He's now out for the season, is going to miss every single game from here on out in the 2015 season, as is Justin Forsett with a broken arm.
It just seems like the injury report has piled on. The injury reserve has just piled on for the Ravens for 2015. And not to mention, you know, what else we're going to be talking about today besides the Ravens-Rams, Flacco-Forsett, also going to be talking about the Maryland football team for about 30 seconds.
30 seconds, yeah. Because that's pretty much all it's worth at this point.
One more game, folks. Just one more game and the pain is over.
One more game and they have played every single game.
Yep.
All right, so we're also talking about Terps basketball, which, oof.
Number two.
That was a little more exciting than what I was anticipating there, Josh.
Actually, the past two games have been a little more exciting than what you would anticipate them to be. I mean, the Georgetown game, the Ryder-Bronx game, and the Bronx actually showed up there this past weekend against the Terps.
They really did, and it was an entertaining game to watch, but you weren't thinking that it was going to be entertaining. You were thinking Maryland was going to, number two team now in the country, was going to wax Ryder, but it didn't happen really until the second half when they just really turned it on. Diamond Stone and Rasheed Suleiman and,
Robert Carter Jr.
Carter Jr., these guys, you got quite a core lineup of Terps players, but you could talk about that win and saying how Maryland almost let that one squeak by them, but at the same time, they were down by 14 points in that game, Josh.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how this talent is going to gel completely well towards the end of the year, which most teams that are super talented like the Terps are perceived to be usually don't gel towards the end of the year. I mean, take, for example, the 2008 Boston Celtics when they had Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen sign with Paul Pierce. That team necessarily didn't gel towards the end of the year, and it resulted in a championship. Could we be saying the same about the Terps men's team? We'll find out later on in the show. But also, towards the end of the show, we'll hate to do this because it's one of my favorite pay-per-views of all time, but we have to give a negative review on Survivor Series.
It's one of the big four, and one of the big four did not deliver for World Wrestling Entertainment. So we're going to be talking about that on this episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. But first and foremost, we do have to discuss the Ravens versus the Rams, and just exactly, the game is just, look, it's out of bounds at this point. You could have really just taken the loss right there and would have been happier than losing your franchise quarterback for torn ACL. Yes, Joseph Vincent Flacco has a torn ACL and a torn MCL. He is going to be getting surgery. He's going to be out for a very significant period of time. He may not even be ready for training camp of next year. But, yeah, people are saying, Well, worrying about next year, a little early to be doing that. Well, what are you playing for this year? There's nothing to play for except for a draft pick. And even then, it's not a guarantee. There are people talking about the Ravens tanking. Even I was kind of jokingly saying, maybe they should tank for the better draft pick and actually bench Joe Flacco to protect him. I didn't know that the joke was actually going to be correct, sort of, by maybe you should have taken Joe Flacco out of there and protected him. But when you do that, then he doesn't get his game experience, he becomes a little rusty, and then you kind of admit, Josh, and this is why it's kind of ridiculous, the concept of tanking in the NFL, you've only got a certain amount of chances to get a revenue stream going here with ticket sales and everything that else is going on. So if you actually bench your franchise quarterback to protect him and say that you're tanking for the draft pick, why would people come to your game to watch?
Yeah, I mean, you do bring up a great point as to if you're legitimately tanking, if you admittedly are tanking, why would anybody come to watch? Why would anybody fill up a M&T Bank Stadium? Right. The Ravens are so bad right now that people can't sell tickets. I mean, most people are now focused on the holidays. By the way, we hope everybody has a wonderful Thanksgiving this week, and hopefully you're all safe on Black Friday and Cyber Monday.
Yeah, I'm not doing any Black Friday shopping this year. You know what I'm doing for Black Friday, Josh?
Sleeping.
I'm going to be painting my fence outside.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm going to be doing, because I feel like I'm going to have a day off on Black Friday. It's not a guarantee that I'm going to have a day off. Look, not everybody has off on Black Friday the day after Thanksgiving. Some people don't even have off for Thanksgiving. I happen to have off for Thanksgiving. My one production company that I work for, they have off on Black Friday. But I'm not sure about my actual job that pays the bills, so we'll have to think about that one for a second. But at the same time, yeah, I'm not doing any Black Friday shopping. I'm going to be relaxing on a Black Friday and not do any type of shopping whatsoever, because let's just face it, Black Friday's overrated to me.
Yeah, and bringing up the subject of Black Friday and shopping and everything else that will be involving the Ravens in the 2016 NFL offseason, you would happen to think that if the worse you are as a team, the better your financial situation is going into next year, the better your drafting situation is going into the 2016 NFL draft. And now, with the Baltimore Ravens at 3-7 right now, and obviously still trying to find room to improve, I mean, look, realistically, they're still in the hunt. I mean, the playoff,
they're not in the hunt.
No, not in the hunt. Not in the hunt, but statistically, according to standings, they still are. There is no X or Z next to their name. They haven't been eliminated yet.
Get rid of that hope.
I'm trying to get rid of the hope, but
there is no hope.
Overall, Ray, overall in the league right now, they are the seventh worst team in the National Football League. Granted, they have lost to the 49ers, so technically they would be the sixth worst team in the NFL, not even garnering a top five pick.
You know, you're making it even worse. So why are you still talking about hope and everything like that? But I will say this, though, about the NFL. Only 11 teams have a winning record in Week 11. That's bad. That is really bad. Chalk that up with all the penalties that we have seen that have just been miscalled, the timing issues that the referees have had, clock issues, the scandals and the Greg Hardy thing and everything that was going on with the NFL. Football sucked this year. Let's just face it. It has flat out sucked.
Yeah, it has. The product has fallen off. And I'm not sure you can, you know, some people want to pinpoint, well, there were too many undefeated teams going into Week 9, Week 10 and everything. Well, granted, yes, that makes the rest of the product mediocre, but at the same time, it does make the postseason exciting because, let's face it, a lot of people are gearing up for a Panthers-New England Super Bowl. And look, I know what you're thinking. Yes, the Ravens, realistically, are still in the hunt, but at the same time, realistically, they're not going to make the playoffs, okay?
Realistically, they're not making the playoffs, period.
With Matt Schaub as your quarterback, look, would it be a great story if Matt Schaub ended up winning six games in a row and ending the season at 9-7.
No, it wouldn't be a great story because then you have a quarterback controversy in Baltimore.
You know what? That is right. And by the way, I did write something just recently on sportsblog.com. A round of applause for the Flacco haters. You got what you wanted. Joe Flacco is out of the starting position, not by choice, but by fate. And now, what are you going to do? Let's see what happens.
Although some conspiracy theorists will say that it was by choice, that somehow the Steve Bisciotti arranged for somebody to roll into his leg and him getting hurt in the last quarter of the game, and he still plays three plays, three drives. So
James Hurst rolling into his leg there.
Yeah, because there is a silver lining. You could say that there is a silver lining to Flacco's injury, even though you'd never really want to put a good spin on somebody getting injured, because somebody getting injured is horrible. It stinks. It costs somebody money. It does everything like that. Is that it could be a chance for the Ravens front office to lowball Joe Flacco on a terms of a contract extension and get those figures lowered, because they're going to have to do that. When he originally signed that contract, he was going to have to do that. But everybody says that, oh, well, it's his big giant contract that's hurting his team. He has pretty much the same cap hit as Tom Brady has right now. And yet Tom Brady's contract isn't hurting the Patriots. They've got a decent team built all around, and Tom Brady isn't even the biggest superstar on the team. Right now, the biggest superstar on the New England Patriots is not Tom Brady. It's Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah. And when you look at Joe Flacco's seasonal stats right here, you got 4, 5, 6.
He was on pace to pass for 4,000 yards, Josh, and he's not going to do it again this year.
Yeah. 15, I believe it's, if my math here is correct, 8, 9, 10, 14 touchdowns, 12 interceptions on the year, 2,791 yards. And in 11 games played, you're actually, no, 10 games played, you would think that, yes, he was going to get to that 4,000-yard plateau. But at the same time, look, it was not a great year for Joe Flacco. It was not a great year for really any Ravens player, period.
No, it wasn't a great year for any Ravens player, any Ravens coach, any Ravens front office executive. It was just bad all around for the Baltimore Ravens. And just chalk it up and get something for next year, because you got to be thinking towards the future, because John Harbaugh is going to get his first losing record as a head coach in the NFL. And, wow, he's been in the league for over 7 years as a head coach. That's remarkable. You gotta tip your cap to that one.
Okay, now let's just look at the game for a quick second here as far as who did good and necessarily who did bad. Granted, Justin Tucker did bad other than the game-winning field goal. My God, 50 yards and more is just... he doesn't seem automatic in that department anymore.
I think he's been kind of faced since that 49ers game when he tripped and hit the turf. I think he kind of fears that happening again. That might be in his head.
Are you saying it's like what's-his-face in Major League 2, the catcher who couldn't throw back to the pitcher, so he throws everywhere else because he doesn't want to throw over his head?
I would think that.
Yeah, it's sort of like that fear. And the only way he can get over that fear is if he thinks of women's undergarments that are on sale at the local Sears or something like that. That's probably the only. That's how the guy got over his fear in Major League 2.
Yeah, but, he did.
Yeah, but no, I don't think Tucker's going to have that problem. He's a married man, and I believe he has a child along the way, too. So, but, yeah, if you had to look at something positive from the 16-13 win at M&T Bank Stadium for the Ravens, Javorius Allen, who now is going to be getting the bulk of the carries going into this season, to the rest of the season, had 115 total scrimmage yards. He had 67 rushing yards, and he had 48 receiving yards.
Get used to that, because you're going to be seeing a lot more of him.
Yeah, and there's not much depth there in the running backs department. Crockett Gilmore had his first 100-yard game of the season, 5 catches, 101 yards, was targeted 8 times, and like you said about Javorius Allen, get used to that, because we're going to be seeing that a lot more. Him, Max Williams, Nick Boyle as well. A lot of the tight ends are going to be getting a lot of receiving looks because, let's face it, Kamar Aiken, 5 catches, 50 yards, averaging 10 yards a reception. Maybe that's good if you're the number three guy. It's not good if you're the number one overall receiver on your team.
Unless, you know, of course, Matt Schaub comes in and proves his numbers, then there could be something to say about Kamar Aiken's ability to play a pass catch, but I don't know if Matt Schaub's going to be able to do that. You could see maybe a couple flashes in the pan here from Schaub, but his last year in the league as a starter, he was a dumpster fire himself.
Yeah, he has not started a game in the NFL since week 17 in the 2013 season, and even then in 2014 with the Oakland Raiders. With the Oakland Raiders, who lost Derek Carr in his rookie year, and they had to go to Matt Schaub for some playing time. There was no Amari Cooper, no Latavius Murray carrying a bulk of the yards there in the running game. You didn't have Michael Crabtree. So, yeah, you could make an argument that say, well, Matt Schaub doesn't really have a whole lot of weapons. Well, guess what? He doesn't have a whole lot of weapons on the Baltimore Ravens offense either.
He has no weapons.
He has no weapons at all. I mean, Crockett Gilmore, if you want to count him as a weapon, but even then, that's a guy who could probably benefit a lot more playing for, say, oh, I don't know, New England, Arizona right now, Carolina. Not in Baltimore. Not this year. All right. Let's look at the two guys that are injured. All right, we'll start with Justin Forsett, of course, who suffered two broken bones in his right arm, will miss the rest of the season. Just a bad way to go out in the first year of your new contract.
Yeah, it is a bad way to go out, and it just looked gruesome all around for a one Justin Forsett. It kind of felt really bad for the guy when I saw that coming out, and he, as soon as you see it, it's you're like, wow, he is done. He is absolutely done. Stick a fork in him.
Yeah, the defensive lineman for the Rams, I forgot who it was, but when he went and tackled Forsett, it looked like he judo-throwed the guy and just made him land on his arm the wrong way.
There were people that were crying foul on that as well, but you got to be able to look
at that. It's just one of those unfortunate things that happen.
You can say the penalty could be called. What for? What would it benefit you now at this point? Nothing. It does nothing for you. The game was a loss. It was a wash.
You know, it's like when we're at home and we end up falling down the stairs. You know, some days we'll fall down the stairs and we won't hurt a thing. It'll just be one of those, oops, my bad. There'll be that one day you fall down the stairs and all of a sudden you bend your hand or your arm the wrong way. Boom. It's one of those unfortunate things that happened. That's what happened to Justin Forsett. And granted, the only good thing that you could say about this is that it was his first major injury. And thankfully, it wasn't a leg injury, because if it was the same injury as, say, Joe Flacco or even what Jamaal Charles suffered this year playing for the Chiefs, we may not be able to see much of Justin Forsett in the running game next year. But hopefully his right arm heals up and hopefully he'll get a whole lot of carries going into 2016, because this year with the Ravens playing from behind too much, it just has not benefited Justin Forsett one bit.
No, not one bit. Joe Flacco now. We move on to him.
And that's the big issue right there, because you have a quarterback who started well over 100 games, is fifth all-time. And think about that. He is fifth all-time in consecutive games started. The guy started over 100 games. Look, I don't care who you are. Starting 100 games at the quarterback position where you are beaten up more times than not, maybe running backs can make an argument right there for getting beaten up the most.
Or offensive linemen and defensive linemen.
Oh, right. The quarterback position is a tough position to play. To play 100 games straight is remarkable. Brett Favre did it, almost 300 times in his career? But then again, maybe he played one too many games that he should have. And
he was a freak of nature.
He was a freak of nature. And yeah, there won't be another Brett Favre.
Of course, he congratulates Peyton Manning from nature.
Yeah, exactly, in a treehouse somewhere. But you look at a quarterback who's going to be 31 next year, still relatively young as a quarterback, but at the same time, his window in terms of what he can accomplish in the NFL is going to slowly diminish from there on out, unless he gets a great crew of offensive linemen that can guard him and keep him from another freak injury like that.
How about a consistent offensive coordinator?
A consistent offensive coordinator. A coordinator that can stay with him, like Tom Moore. Take Tom Moore, for example. How many years was he in Indianapolis with Peyton Manning? And that offense ran majestically. So
until the playoffs.
Until the playoffs, right. But my point exactly, your point, Flacco needs a consistent offensive coordinator, and let's face it, Mark Trestman is not getting a head coaching job after this year, given with the way the offense has performed overall. But with Flacco, though, give me your perspective here, Ray. Suffering an injury like this, and Carson Palmer suffered an ACL injury last season in November, missed the rest of the year, but did start the training camp on time. But with a torn ACL and a torn MCL, how do you adjust as a quarterback going into next year, if you even start next year on time?
It's all about what you do with your plant foot and how you are able to scramble outside of the pocket, which Joe Flacco hasn't really been a big scrambling quarterback. He's more of a pocket passer. So the MCL, ACL is not going to affect his running ability that much, but it is going to affect his ability to plant the ball and be able to actually get some distance on the spiral. But with Joe Flacco himself, with the torn ACL and the torn MCL, it's going to be tough for him to come back from, only if the fact that this injury happened well past the halfway point in the NFL season. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can actually make training camp and what he can actually do in training camp, what kind of reps he gets, and how much he gives a little bit in physical therapy before the surgery and after the surgery, because in surgery nowadays, the technology is there. It's completely almost routine kind of for one Joseph Vincent Flacco. But this is his first significant injury in his pro career, something that he hasn't really been able to you know, cope with, is see how he does, because one of the big criticisms for Ronda Rousey was she's never been hit in the mouth.
Yeah.
Joe Flacco just got hit in the mouth. Let's see how he responds by that.
I think one of two things are going to happen. Either he will adapt and evolve with the injury that he was given and end up becoming, who knows, maybe he'll end up becoming a better, more careful player because of it, and he'll make wiser choices. Or maybe he'll be in denial that he suffered the injury and he'll perish as a quarterback. And I'm talking not literally, but I'm talking more.
I hope not literally.
Not literally. He's not going to perish off the field, but, you know, perish off the radar completely as a top tier quarterback in the league. All right, now real quick, the Ravens are going to be going on the road against the Cleveland Browns on Monday Night Football at 8:30. Prediction time, Ray. Do the Ravens win this game?
No.
Score?
It's going to be, 24-7. Schaub throws four interceptions.
Schaub throws four interceptions. Well, I'm going to be more generous. I'm going to say 21-12. I think Justin Tucker hits four field goals. Matt Schaub throws two interceptions.
I was about to say, if Justin Forsett can hit field goals, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
Do it well with a broken arm in a position he doesn't even play.
Yep, and maybe the Flacco haters will get a moment of clarity when they realize that they did not realize what they had until it's gone, and Joe Flacco was at something.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
The Indiana Hoosiers and Maryland Terrapins football game was exciting for the Terps in the first quarter, and then the second, third, and fourth quarter happened. Yeah, after a 21-10 lead for the Terps in the first quarter, it just went off the rails, 47-28, Indiana Hoosiers.
If you were to tell me that Indiana versus Maryland basketball, I would have been, okay, that sounds exciting.
But before we get to men's basketball, we got to at least put this stat out here. Do you know how many interceptions the Maryland men's football team.
They have a women's football team? Go Maryland.
They have the Legends Football League, I believe. So
that's a little different,
Josh. That's a little different. I know. But, yeah, the Maryland football team has thrown 28 interceptions this year.
Yeah, that's not going to win you any bowl game.
And they've thrown less than 48%. They've completed less than 48% of their passes. So what does that tell you about their recruiting for next year?
They really need to go quarterback. All in.
And a receiver.
Yes.
And a receiver.
They got a five-star receiver a couple years ago in Stephon Diggs. They can do that again, right?
Yep.
Right.
Maybe. But one team that hasn't had any problems recruiting at all were the Maryland men's basketball team. And right before we went off the show, the Maryland Terrapins were taking on the Georgetown Hoyas, and that was a pretty interesting game. I mean, you did have some back and forth there, and Georgetown, after the first half, was tied with Maryland in 33-33, and we all know it was going to be a tough matchup going in for the Terps. The Georgetown Hoyas, year in, year out, under John Thompson, always seems to put out a great class of basketball players.
John Thompson III.
John Thompson III. Thank you.
Remember, granddad is the legend, John Thompson.
I forgot there were three John Thompsons there for a second there. Yeah, John Thompson II has the national title in the name of the Georgetown Hoyas there. But looking at the 75-71 victory for the Terrapins, where in the second half they outscored Georgetown 42-38, just enough to get the victory. You look at the starters for the Maryland Terrapins. The main name, of course, from that game was Mello Trimble, who had 24 points, had 3 assists, 3 steals, 1 rebound, and was 13 from 18 from the free throw line. And it amazes me that he seems a little, I don't know if it's the beginning of the year and maybe he just seems a little off at the moment, but doesn't it seem like Mello Trimble has lacked a little bit from the free throw line this year?
Possibly, but then again, it just could be butterflies getting it out of the system for the beginning of the year, because this team is just stacked all the way around, and it's exciting to watch for against, especially that Georgetown game, Josh. My social media exploded when that was happening. I mean, people were just going crazy. I was thinking to myself, wow, I didn't know this many people actually cared about Terps basketball.
You know who else looked really good in that game was Robert Carter Jr., 12 points, 8 rebounds, 1 assist. I'll tell you what, I mean, you talk about guys who just were added to the mix, not so much recruited by Maryland, but more so were recruited to come over from other schools. You had Robert Carter Jr. with 12 points. You had Rashid Suleiman, who had 10 points, 7 assists, and two rebounds, and also was 2 for 2 from the three-point line. It's pretty interesting to see those new guys coming into the fold and just adding to the Terps' offense. I mean, Jake Layman and Melo Trimble, it just seems like they're taken back and saying, you know, Melo, you know, Jake, you guys really don't need to go all out that hard. I mean, we got Rashid, we got Robert Carter Jr., heck, we got this new kid, Diamond Stone. I mean, yeah, I mean, you could score 10 points here and there, but yeah, I mean, these guys are just fantastic right now.
And with Rashid Suleiman in the game against Ryder, it seemed like that was his coming out game, like a breakout game where he was finally getting, you know, notifications from normal Terps fans who are saying, wow, this guy was a Duke transfer? He's my favorite player from Duke right now.
Yeah, and the Ryder Bronx out of New Jersey, of course, were leading 31-29 in the first half and just taking it to Maryland. I mean, you do have to give credit where credit is due in that game. Those kids definitely showed up against a then number 3 Maryland Terrapins team. But in the second half, of course, Maryland, once they got going with that offense, they just didn't stop. I mean, Robert Carter Jr. had 13 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 steal in that game. Also, looking at who else had a solid game there, Diamond Stone, 12 points, 2 blocks, 5 rebounds, and was 6 for 7 from the floor. You just look at Diamond Stone and how much he progressed in these first couple games, along with Rashid Suleiman, who once again had a solid day from the 3-point line, 3 for 7. This Maryland team, Ray, this men's team, the number 2 team, I know they still got a ways to go before their next big matchup, which will be against number 9 North Carolina. Of course, that's a little bit ways away. But of course, you got Illinois State. You have, who else do you have coming up here? You also have University of Cleveland as well, Cleveland State, excuse me, going in. And these are 2 home games that you're going to have to play before you go on the road and play the number 9 North Carolina Tar Heels. What do you think will happen once Maryland meets up with North Carolina? Do you think those old ill will ACC rival memories will surface?
Not really.
No?
It's a young team. They're going to be like, okay, well, we're in the Big Ten now, so this is just the ACC, just another game to us. I mean, yeah, you got the fans will be riled up for it, and everybody's thinking about, oh, yeah, it's our old ACC rivals, the North Carolina Tar Heels. But to the players, it's not going to be that big of a difference.
Yep, 65-58 was that victory for the Terrapins over the Ryder Bronx. And now we move on to the women's side of things, where the Lady Terps, as of now, are currently ranked number 6 in the nation, according to the AP Top 25 poll. And who, as of recent, you know, even though let's give respect to the men for winning their games and starting off 3-0, but the Lady Terps, every game they've played this year to start the season, Ray, just complete dominance. I mean, we look at the Wednesday, November 18th game against High Point. Maryland won that 105-50.
High Point? High Point University? You mean the same High Point University in my senior year of high school I was just getting spam mail from saying, hey, come here, go here to college and come join us at High Point. I'm like, I've never even heard of this place.
Pretty much the same school. The star of that game was, of course, Shatori Walker Kimbrough, who had 26 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 4 blocks. Maybe I'm getting sick of it because I just want to see other girls step up, but it seems like every time we bring up the women's basketball team of Maryland and their dominance over teams, the one name that always gets brought up is Walker Kimbrough, who just seems to score in double digits, not just double digits, but over 20-something points a game. And then, of course, you have Brianna Jones, who was just flat-out incredible in that game, 18 points, 10 rebounds. Let's see, who else here had a solid game? Kia Gillespie, the forward, had 19 points, 7 rebounds, and 2 steals. You have this Brenda Fries-led team that is going to be going places, of course. You have this team that's got the number 1 recruiting class going into next year and just has nowhere to go but up. And you would just have to say to yourself, wow, you know, 105-50 victory, and then you go to the game where they won 97-41. Over to Detroit Titans. Detroit Titans. Doesn't that sound like a...
That sounds like a knockoff, like, NFL
Arena Football League team,
NFL B team.
Yeah, and of course, during this past weekend, Brenda Fries, in that game, the 97-41 victory, achieved her 400th victory overall as a women's head basketball coach. So congratulations to Brenda Fries for that accomplishment right there. And looking at the box score of that game, you had Kia Gillespie, of course, was your top scorer, 18 points, had one rebound, one steal, one block. So she was a defensive She, of course, had the defensive trifecta where you had the rebounds, the blocks, and the steals. Looking at who else was solid in that game, you had Brene Mosley, who had 13 points, 10 assists, 5 rebounds, and was a perfect 1-for-1 from the three-point line. Kristen Confroy, a guard, went 4-for-7 from the three-point line, got 12 points overall. And it just seems like nothing but good times ahead for both the men and the women. I mean, granted, the men are going to have to face North Carolina in the third matchup coming up. But other than that, I mean, you look at the rest of the Big Ten, you look at the rest of the landscape of college basketball on both the men's and the women's side, and the odds seem to be favoring College Park right now.
It's favoring College Park. It's a fun time to be a Terps fan.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
So about Survivor Series, that was a very underwhelming pay-per-view, to say the least.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that you would think that a pay-per-view with a tournament for the World Heavyweight Championship, the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, you would think that it would at least be compelling. At least towards the end, it would be compelling.
It wasn't compelling at all. I mean, even the one match that I was kind of hyped for, the women's match between Paige and Charlotte, that underwhelmed. There was just something off about that match all throughout it. And it was, they got a decent amount of time to work, but it just seemed like nobody could really get ahead in that match. And everything else happening, the New Day was obviously the highlight of that night because of, you know, Xavier Woods' hairdo and their antics.
He looked like a mix between Bruno Mars and James Brown with that hairdo there.
And there was really nothing else about that show that was any least bit memorable. Nothing really happened to where I could just say to myself, huh, well, that was incredible. It wasn't like last year's Survivor Series where all of a sudden they had the great Survivor Series traditional matchup, and then all of a sudden...
And there were implications towards the end.
Yeah, there were implications towards the end, and all of a sudden Dolph Ziggler is the sole survivor, and that's because of Sting, and everything that was happening just happened at the Survivor Series. They couldn't top last year. There was no doubt about that. But they didn't even come close to last year with this year's Survivor Series. It was pretty bad.
And speaking of Dolph Ziggler, isn't it amazing how much a superstar can fall off from a 365-day calendar and lose cleanly to Tyler Breeze? Not that there's anything wrong with Tyler Breeze. I just didn't like the concept of it being at that pay-per-view, considering what Dolph Ziggler achieved last year.
Considering what he achieved last year, and you were thinking, okay, this could be the start of a big thing for him, and it turns out that it wasn't. As a matter of fact, he was fired for a little bit part of the year, called kayfabe fired, as storyline fired, but at the same time, he just could not capitalize on the momentum that he gained from that match last year and everything that was going on with the stipulations and the authority being knocked out of power, only to be brought back in power due to a hostage situation.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. Pretty much the same thing as just pulling regular heel tactics and getting what you want there. Looking at the matches overall, one of my favorite matches was Dean Ambrose fighting Kevin Owens. And of course, if you were fans of Ring of Honor, CZW, this was right up your alley with these two because it just seemed like they clicked on all cylinders.
Yeah, that match wasn't too bad, although I was hoping that Owens would win it, but they had to go with the predictable.
Just to give a surprise.
They had to go with the predictable friend versus friend match at the end there and see what would happen. And you would think that a heel turn would have happened during that match, but alas, it didn't happen at all.
Yeah, and we'll get to that shortly, of course. The Charlotte Page match, I do agree with you. It was very underwhelming, and considering that you had this Divas Revolution here, maybe it's not Page that's causing the issues with the match. Maybe it was because Page was being a full-blown heel in the match. Maybe it's Charlotte. Maybe, I mean, I hate to say it, considering she's a second-generation wrestler. She's the daughter of the Nature Boy Ric Flair, one of the greatest of all time, but... She seems to be lacking something in a match like this.
That and her just her skills in the microphone need a lot of work as well. But with that, I remember I'll point to something exactly that happened, and that was when Paige was jockeying towards the crowd, you know, showing that she's like, yeah, this is my house, this is what I'm doing. That should have been a more impressive spear off of the barricade.
She should have had a nice running start, and
well, no, it just looked like she just pushed her off the barricade, and it just looked like they just went for a tumble. I'm like, okay, that was supposed to be a spear off the barricade, and it underperformed. I think just right then and there, they just thought the match was kind of doomed, and everything that was happening, and then they got the angle going on where she was actually underneath the ropes when she bridged the figure eights. It just something just felt completely off about the match, including the fact that they had the controversy about using Charlotte's deceased brother in an angle, and the Flair family had no prior knowledge of it, nor did the WWE get consent.
All right, Tyler Breeze beating Dolph Ziggler. Is this the beginning of Breeze and the end of Ziggler?
Maybe.
Yeah, Ziggler got beat clean.
Considering that they're both pretty much the same character, even though Ziggler doesn't want to admit it, they are the same character.
Yeah, do you think Breeze should lose Summer Rae, though?
I think anybody should lose Summer Rae.
She's just bad luck.
That and the fact that the storylines that she's been involved in have just been terrible. And everybody, it seems like every wrestler that she touches just all of a sudden just doesn't have a good run. I mean, she had a run with Fandango there for a bit, who was white hot for a long time, and then he hooks up with Summer Rae, and then all of a sudden, nope, that doesn't happen.
All right, thoughts on The Undertaker's 25th anniversary match against the White Family?
That was a showcase.
Was that a showcase more in wrestling, or just a showcase of just a spectacle in general?
That was just a showcase and just a spectacle of just, hey, this is The Undertaker, this is what he's always done, just show him what he... Just show what he's done for the last 25 years of just dominance and everything that happens, and... It seemed like, okay, yeah, that's what you would want in a 25-year anniversary, but what was going on with these angles of the Wyatts abducting them? What happened? What did he steal their souls and everything that was happening? No, it just seemed like it was exactly the same as what we saw at WrestleMania 31.
It just looked all thrown together.
It just looked just something just contrived to pieces, and I just can't help but think that there was other plans for this match that just could not fall through because they had it to where Undertaker and Kane were going to feud against the Wyatt family. They were going to be outnumbered, and then eventually they would need help to get somebody to help them. They decided to call on Brock Lesnar or Sting, but you have to look at the health of Sting. How is he 100%? Is he 100%? Is he ready to go? And what was the status of Brock Lesnar? Maybe both of them weren't available, and they just had to go with a makeshift tag team all of a sudden and just do a showcase of just his talents. They had to get him to win because after what happened at Hell in a Cell and how he got beat by Brock and everything that was happening, you want the guy to go out on a high note because he is one of the best performers in history for your company. You need to send him out on a high note.
Now, looking at the finals match between Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, I'll give my review and then you can criticize me on this. I thought the match wasn't too bad, but I think they could have added 10 more minutes of action to the match.
They could have added 10 more minutes of action considering that the pay-per-view itself was like 2 hours and 45 minutes. It was less than an episode of Monday Night Raw. And there were even commercials during the pay-per-view. It's a pay-per-view. Why are there commercials? You pay for this. You're supposed to pay for this and not actually get like sponsors going through. I guess the WWE is a little bit hard up for money nowadays. But that match itself, a lot of people don't realize this, but I think Dean Ambrose has the same amount of in-ring quality work as Roman Reigns does. A lot of people criticize Reigns for that, but they leave Ambrose alone. But
because Ambrose is a more compelling character.
I see Ambrose do like his suicide dive push.
Yeah.
All the time. He's just
being safe.
It underwhelms me every time when I see that. And I see him like doing like elbow drops off the safe rung of the ladder instead of going up the tippy-tippy top like a lot of guys would do. He's liked by fans, but I'm just not that big on Dean Ambrose or Roman Reigns for that matter. But I just like it how Reigns gets the heat. Ambrose does not.
Yeah, I do agree with that sentiment right there. And looking at the 5-minute reign of Roman Reigns, and we all know what happened. Sheamus cashed in. He beat Reigns in 34 seconds, won the title. Reigns' reign as champion lasted 5 minutes and 14 seconds.
As it was still raining confetti.
Yeah, as it was still raining confetti. While we're keeping the rain angle going.
Yeah, you couldn't even see. It was like all of a sudden a heavy downpour of rain.
Okay, before we close the show, give me your Booker perspective. Let's pretend you're the Booker of the main event.
Booker T?
Not Booker T. No. I got my man bun. Like a creative Booker.
Okay.
How would you have booked the ending to the match?
Of that match itself?
Like the time, how it would have ended, and what would have transpired afterwards.
Well, I would have definitely made it a kind of a memorable match, and then what would happen is Reigns would hit Ambrose with a spear, and then you think that he's about to win, and then all of a sudden H's music hits, and then Reigns is distracted for a second. Ambrose comes in with a low blow, hits him back, and then rolls him up for a schoolboy to win. 1, 2, 3. Sheamus does not cash in. He holds on to it for a little while longer, and Ambrose is your turn, and he becomes the guy for Mr. Triple H, and Reigns is once again so close yet so far.
I would have booked it this way. I would have made the match 20 minutes. Of course, I'd have Reigns and Ambrose go outside for a little bit, go through a table, double count out. Triple H's music hits and says, no, we're not having this again. Let's restart the match. No count out, no disqualification. And then this would be like a, what? What does he mean, no disqualification? Reigns will hit a couple spears on Ambrose, try to pin him, and then he realizes Ambrose can't be beat. Ambrose is on that adrenaline rush. Then all of a sudden, Reigns gets the urge to grab a sledgehammer from Triple H, uses it on Ambrose, 1, 2, 3. He's your new corporate champion. Alas, that did not happen. Sheamus is your champion, and now you're going into a conundrum situation where John Cena's out filming a TV show, Randy Orton is injured, Cesaro is injured, Daniel Bryan is still sitting at home, even though he's cleared by other doctors besides the WWE's to return to action. Ray, who is a compelling figure that can challenge Sheamus besides Roman Reigns? Can you think of any?
Bring up Balor?
Oh my goodness. Just bring everybody up from NXT. It's like the failing Major League Baseball team. You know what? Let's just call every five-star prospect.
I mean, they have – the ratings are in the crapper. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Well, why not for us? This is another edition of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. What are we talking about next week?
I think we're going to be talking about more Maryland wins. I think even though we predicted the Ravens are going to lose, maybe Matt Schaub surprises us and – maybe the Flacco haters will come out in full force and be on the Schaub revolution. I'm just kidding. That's probably not going to happen. But
be on the Baltimore Sports free-for-all revolution.
Yeah, be on the free-for-all revolution. Heck, be on the Peter Angelos revolution, because apparently he's supposed to be
Baltimore
playing a good
Sports
guy
free-for-all
in the Chris Davis negotiations.
That remains to be seen. But yep. This is another edition of the Baltimore Sports free-for-all. I am Ray Atkinson.
And I am Josh Hall. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
And we will see you all.